Really glad that you came today. Yesterday we started a conversation that goes all week talking about kind of unpacking buzzwords that we use in missions and ministry. The title class is, May I Ask a Stupid Question? And like we talked about last week, there's a tendency in any discipline or any field of work or endeavor to kind of create our own specialized language, our jargon. And we use that as shorthand, so we don't have to explain big concepts when we're talking. The problem is that it creates a barrier between sort of insiders and outsiders, or between specialists and people who don't specialize, spend all their time in a certain area. And so you can kind of have an elitist mentality that develops with those who consider themselves the insiders or the specialists, and it creates a barrier of communication. But it also creates a miscommunication within the insider community, because we think, because we're using the same language, that we mean the same things. And we start down the road together and we find out, whoa, what you're talking about, what I'm talking about are not the same thing. We're just using the same buzzwords. Well, in the missions ministry area, and as those worlds have kind of grown closer together and the barrier has dropped so much between the missions world and the ministry world, one of the big buzzwords that came up was the word missional and mission. We addressed that yesterday. And as we sort of redefine our objective toward a more missional way of thinking, the shift then comes, instead of building great churches, institution building, and doing member recruitment as if the church is the end, we kind of came to an awareness, wait a minute, the church is the means, not the end. The church is the instrument that God uses to do his work in the world, but it's not the objective. The goal isn't just get a whole bunch of people in an institution or to build an institution. It's not about the institution. That's an abstraction. The goal is about the people. So we got to rethink this. So as you make the missional move, then there becomes a shift toward, well, what is the objective? If the goal isn't just build big, enduring institutions, centralized structures, what is the goal? Well, then the goal is what? Making disciples. So disciples becomes the big buzzword language. And everybody using that language. In missions, in domestic ministry, everybody's saying the solution is we just need to make disciples. We just need to make disciples. And that sounds great until you say, well, what is that? And what does one look like? And how do you make one? So MRN has been in the middle of this shift for a number of years. Before I came aboard 5 years ago, MRN had made the shift from the language of church planting, not because that's bad, but because it's easily misunderstood. Talking about, instead of shifting from a church planting, talking about making disciples and participating and facilitating disciple-making movements. And so, by the way, I'm Dan Buchel, president of Missions Resource Network. We've got a couple of our continent directors here who have been training people in disciple-making, engaging really a whole guild of disciple-makers and disciple-making trainers from around the world for the last decade or so. I've got Mark Cooper, who directs our Asian work, Phil Jackson, who directs our European work. And we want to just have a conversation about this whole language of disciple and discipleship. So, first off, if you could explain, when we say disciple, what do we mean? And how is that different from being a Christian? Why the language shift?
Well, in a biblical perspective, you remember the word Christian is used like 3 times in the New Testament. The word disciple is used many times. But it's interesting that the word disciple is only used in the Gospels and Acts. You get into the letters, it's not used. But I think the key verse that talks about this is Acts 11:26, when he says, Luke states that the disciples in Antioch were first called Christians. And so the key there is, okay, what is the relationship between disciples and Christians? I don't think there's that much difference, okay? There's not really that dichotomy of, well, he's a disciple or he's a Christian. No, it's the same thing. But how we use that word today has become very different.
I'm not the biblical scholar you are, but well, I think that's, as we think of the word today, there is a difference, and I think we recognize that. And I'm not going to sit here as an expert, but I do feel as we interact with churches, as we interact with missionaries, as we discuss about what our role is in God's mission, I think there is an understanding that a disciple is on a journey. And that Christian, the word Christian, I guess, is kind of settled into a meaning of an adherence, or we agree on something, and that may be Christ. But that the disciple has more of an intentionality about his purpose. Should it be that way? Of course not. I think these words should be synonymous, and we would all agree to that. But we're living today, and we're dealing with words, and we're interacting with people, and we're trying to communicate. And I think we are trying to come to a point where the word disciple has a meaning with a purpose that we can fully participate in. And it is interesting. I think as we try to address this idea of what is a disciple, I reflect upon who has invested in me and who has shown me a path and help form me into who I am today. And so I think as we talk about making disciples, I think I even have to back up further and realize, what's the path I've been on? How have I submitted to such a formative relationship and a formative journey? So I think this is part of, as we get to talk about this maybe a little bit later, we can talk more about just our own personal journey of becoming.
We were with a church, Jay and I were with a church just a couple of months ago that's not in this country, and this church has been agreeing about this whole disciple conversation, and yes, we need to make disciples and all that. And a couple of the leaders of that church just posed the question, okay, again, what do you mean by disciple? Is that some kind of super Christian? Is that kind of another level? We got Christians and then we have disciples. What does that mean? And they were misunderstanding, thinking that a disciple was some kind of better, super, more pious or more holy Christian. And that's not what we're talking about.
So. Well, okay, so you're saying that I can't just get the basic package Christian where I go to heaven. And then, if I want to, I can, get the bigger software package, which will allow me access to other things. Now, okay, so that's not, what is this besides just telling people, you need to take your faith more seriously. You need to be more obedient. I mean, preachers have been telling us that our whole lives. What is the difference here?
Well, I think those have been the questions I've been asking. In the sense that I think I grew up and have existed for a long time and functioned under the understanding that this was all about me and my situation, my salvation. I fully agree that Jesus came to save the lost, but I do believe he came to change the world, and I'm in the world and to come change things. And so I think this is what disciple is, I think, evolving in me to mean, is that I'm part of a transformation of the world. Mm-hmm. And there's a world in me. I have a lot of junk in me. I've got a lot of things in me that needs to be transformed. And so becoming more than I am now, something better than I am now, is I think, part of this definition. There are other classes you could be going to. And if I wasn't here, I'd be in probably somebody else's class about this issue. I just came from a class that was just so encouraging to kind of help me find the language of what my role is, my purpose is, as a follower of Jesus, as being part of the kingdom. And I think that's what we're trying to get a hold of with the word disciple. I don't think we're trying to have an argument of the dichotomy between disciple and Christian. I think we're all too tired for that. And really, to be quite honest, I don't even know where that argument would go. So if we could just not argue that, but just try to capture really who are we as Jesus followers, and what is our role in changing the world as a Jesus follower?
I think that's the key. It's the word disciple, without going through the dichotomy of disciple and Christian, the word disciple doesn't carry the institutional connotations that a word Christian does. And the word disciple gets back to the heart of being, as you said, a Jesus follower. Because we're disciples of someone. Disciples of who? Well, disciples of Christ. Although Paul said, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Sometimes you're discipled by somebody else, or other people lead you on a discipling journey, or you peer disciple one another, as in the case of marriage or friends or whatever it is, there is a discipleship relationship with someone there present in your life. But ultimately, we're disciples of Christ. And that kind of strips away the institutional part and makes it a relationship. And I think the key to being a disciple and making disciples is not doctrine, it's relationship. Okay? And I think that's what Jesus developed with his 12 and with the many others that kind of served as his entourage of disciples. The 120 in the room had a relationship with Jesus. And so when these guys in Antioch in Acts chapter 11, when the disciples, people that had a relationship with each other and with Christ, they became known as Christians, people who followed Christ.
But aren't most churches trying to make disciples? Isn't this a distinction without a difference? Are you saying that there are churches that are not trying to make disciples?
I don't like your tone. that's a good question. And I think we have a wonderful relationship with our churches. That's one of the blessings of the job that we have, is that we get to interact with Christians all over the world. And I think that is the intention. The thing about that I'm discovering is that there is an intentionality. I think of my own journey. I can think of three men that invested in me to specifically pursue something. One person, my brother, took me from shame to inclusion in family. He discipled me on that journey. I was in shame. He took me to inclusion. Another mentor of mine took me from a desire to purpose, a specific purpose of how to be a missionary, of what to do, specifically, not in general. And another brother, another mentor of mine, has helped me through a spiritual formation journey of kind of a desire to find God in a deeper way, to specific spiritual disciplines that have helped me to grow daily. And so, yeah, I think churches are trying to help people on a journey. But churches typically are doing this in very general ways. Mm-hmm. A sermon, a Bible class, a retreat. It's enough for us to be general, to be generally good, to be generally believers, to be general Christians. And I think that's what we're struggling with. A disciple is a specific relationship taking someone from here to here with, I can't say the word specificity, but with very specifically. Okay? We know what we're spending our time for. And that is the blessing of being a disciple maker, because it's not just about the one being disciple, it's about the one making the disciple. I fully believe Jesus was a different person when he chose his 12 and as he left his 12. He was different. He was blessed by being a disciple maker. And the whole idea of discipleship is a blessing for those who are making disciples. We know this to be true. We're different at the end of that journey and throughout that journey. And so I think this is part of the struggle as we imagine the word disciple, making disciples. How do we do that? I think we have all had some experience in that. But I think we struggle to find the specific nature of our relationships with specific people.
And churches are limited. You said, well, aren't our churches already doing that? Churches are limited in what they can do on a couple of hours on Sunday morning and maybe an hour on Wednesday night, or a little bit of a fellowship here and there. We can give out information, and we are really good at being a knowledge-based faith, but the concept of being a disciple goes past knowledge into obedience and accountability and relationship, and that has to be nurtured and developed beyond 1 or 2 hours on Sunday morning.
Okay, so say a church says, all right, we're tired of just making general, knowledge-based Christians. We want to make disciples. What do they do? How do you structure that? What's involved?
What do you think?
We've been playing softball this way, so now we're going to play it this way. But anyway, the idea of of developing relationships, and there's many ways to do this. There's mentoring groups, there's life transformation groups where people meet together in small two or three of the same gender and talk about life and pray together and talk about God's word and are transparent with one another. There are multiple ways that churches can get involved in this, but it's going to have to be in a relationship developing atmosphere. Where there is obedience and accountability, transparency, and intentionality, and not just, well, I hope we make disciples. By the way, just to put everybody at ease about this, I think the most important disciples you make are in your own house, with your children, okay? Or maybe your grandchildren, as some of us have rare hair or no hair or something like that. But I think you and your spouse often disciple each other. There's a peer discipleship going on there. There's discipleship with your children. And so the best place to make disciples is often in your own house, in your own home. And that's what Deuteronomy 6 talks about. When you lie down and you rise up and you walk along the way, you talk about these things with your children. It's a very biblical concept in terms of Old Testament all the way into New Testament. But how do churches do this? I think they develop an atmosphere where homes and where small groups and where people have the opportunity to enter into relationships that mean something and they grow as Christians, grow closer to Jesus.
Well, and I think it's pretty obvious. I think most of us in this room have this experience that if that is a desire, and that is a desire within our churches, they know they have to get smaller. And they have to break down into relationships that mean something. And so, but even small groups, I mean, I've been part of a very large church that has small groups, but a small group could have 30, 40 people in it, so that's even too big. But, I kind of wonder why we say, our churches are doing this. The fact is, whose permission are we seeking to interact with two or three or more people to hold each other accountable to the principles of Christ, to become more faithful husbands, to be pure of heart, to rid the porn out of our house, to be honest, to tell the truth, specifically to read Scripture and to pray about this and to ask each other out of friendship and good accountability, how's it going and how can I enable that? And us to stick together for a set period of time that's doable. I don't know any church leadership that would be against that, and they're not against that. I'm also part of a group Bob Chisholm. We'll get him on tape and give him a plug here. But he's a spiritual formation minister out of Dallas, and this is what he focuses on. And he's had to do this rather grassroots. I mean, a lot of leadership in the church has not known what he's been doing, but he'll gather three or four or five together, and they'll go through readings and accountability for a year. You sign up for a year, 12 months. And there's a beginning and an end, and over that year, you're different. And that group is different. Because you're finally talking about things that are real. I don't think there's any magic in this term, discipleship. I think it's something we all kind of understand. But I do find it curious that we've come to a point where we have generalized, and we have normalized this generalness of our faith and of our community. Jesus did a lot of things with a lot of people, but most things he did with 12, and out of that, most things he did with three or four. Mm-hmm. And when he was at his worst moment, there were three, and then there were two at the trial. At the end of the day, that's about the numbers we're talking about when we use words making disciples. And churches typically our desire and our appetite are the numbers, 1,000, 500. How do we get all this? If we could just not concern ourselves with all that right now, we'll get to those numbers in time. Who are your two? If you can't answer who are your two or three, don't worry about the 500. That's lost.
As we train missionaries, as a missionary in the 1980s, I was sent out, and my charge, my challenge, my stated objectives were to go and plant a church that would reach a number of around 200 and would eventually have elders, and then I would be considered a successful missionary. Today, when as we talk to potential and future missionaries and we're training them and we're helping them understand a disciple-making process, we tell them when we evaluate or when we come and talk to you in a year or two, we're going to ask you two questions. Who are you discipling? What are their names? Who are the three or four? And who are they discipling? What are their names, the three or four? That's the only questions we're going to ask you. And so it really does boil it down to a Jesus model. Who are the 12, the 10, the 3, Peter, James, and John, that you really are discipling, that you really are making a difference and transformation of their lives?
Okay, that sounds great, but we've got churches we've got to deal with. And so I'm sitting at lunch recently with a guy who is in charge of designing a spiritual formation process for a megachurch. And they're wanting to go the discipling direction. And he's developed this curriculum that he wants to run the whole church through, and he wants me to evaluate it. And I'm sitting there looking over this thing, and I'm asking myself, can disciples be mass-produced in the kinds of structures our church already have? And for me, that's the $10,000 million question, however you want to put it. But can we make disciples in mass, in large groups, by creating church-wide programs and just unleashing them on the church? Is that doable?
You know, why couldn't that be encouraging and supplemental and a positive thing toward our goal? I don't think as a standalone I would question that. Just as I would question that people are not mass produced. People are born one at a time with a particular DNA. And I think this is a model, a natural model of what Jesus is trying to encourage us to be part of. I think here again, if our appetite is to grow the church or help the church, bless the church in some way, that I understand that, and these kind of programs are positive. Nobody's going to argue against that. But I still think that's inadequate to take us where we really are trying to go and wanting to go, and seriously, people are hungry to go to. People are wanting those intimate conversations. I mean, you know this. You talk to people. People are looking for that moment where they can share this fear. They have a doubt. Their children are going through something. They have to talk to somebody, and they're not going to go down front and fill out a card and share it with a bunch of people they don't know. That's a good thing, and it can be supportive. But at the end of the day, we are designed by God to deal intimately. It's just the way we're hotwired. And I know that we want our churches to be big and successful, and we have those metrics that we're very concerned about. At least we've normalized that concern. But at the end of the day, the command is go make disciples. And I truly believe what Jesus meant by that is go do with others what I've done with you. And it's not just you make them into something. You reveal who you are to them. Mm-hmm. We know this to be true as leaders or as disciple makers. The main task is to reveal who I am. If Christ is in me, then it will be evident. Reveal Christ in me. But we have normalized and we're very, quite comfortable from getting a podium and we'll tell you about Christ. Be a disciple of Jesus. That's not what he said. Make disciples. I think the assumption is they'll be your disciples. Peter, they'll be your disciples. James, they'll be yours. Judas, they'll be yours. They will see me and you. Have we come to the point where we can interact with a handful of people and say, be like me. Be like me. You can see Christ in me. But I'm putting flesh on the principles of the kingdom. Be like me. Now, that's very challenging when I myself am not a disciple. And so we will pass on our own DNA. If we haven't submitted to that kind of transparency, if we haven't had that kind of relationship with another person to reveal the sin in our lives, our struggles, our development, and to be encouraged through the Word, through prayer, over time, then how are we going to make disciples? And I think that's the hiccup.
So the curriculum that you're talking about in a megachurch or whatever example you're using supplements this. It supplements that relationship. it's not bad. It's not to be thrown out. It doesn't need to exist. No, that's not what we're saying. What we are saying is it supplements the relationship that's going on among people in a discipling relationship or people in a mentoring relationship, whatever you want to call it.
And you know us, Dan. I mean, you know our inadequacies. But I think one of the things that I am discovering is a release, is a freedom. To work with measurables and a metrics of discipleship is doable. I can do this. I can't be the minister of a grand church or plant a bunch of churches. That's just beyond my capacity. But what I can do on a weekly basis is interact with three guys I love. I love them. And they know who I am, and they know who I'm trying to become, and I know what they're trying to become, who they're trying to become, and who they're trying to become like. That I can do. And I think to unleash the church, you're two or three, now we're successful. And I think now the energy's up. Now we're meeting together as a community on Sunday, sharing our experiences in our relationships and being affirmed and exhorted and trained and equipped. Let's have those classes. Let's have those seminars. Absolutely.
And instead of mass-producing disciples from a pulpit or from a classroom perspective, this grassroots movement of who are your two or three and who are their two or three, it actually accomplishes the same thing. It's a multiplication of disciples, and that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about mass-producing them 1,000 at a time, but what we are talking about is rapid multiplication of two or three at a time. And that's the Bible way. That's what happened in Acts. That's what happened in the Gospels. That's what happened as in 2 Timothy 2:2 when Paul said, "The things you've heard from me, teach faithful men; it will teach others also." It's the Bible way.
All right. I have one more question. Then I want to open it up for discussion and questions from the class. You know, in the 80s and the 90s, there was a lot of talk about discipling and disciple making, and it ran through our fellowship and produced what started at Crossroads, then became the Boston Movement. It was very divisive. It became a huge phenomenon. And then we began to see a lot of problems with legalism, the abuse of accountability, and it kind of imploded, and a lot of people got hurt in the process. And you start talking this stuff, and you're talking about accountability and all this kind of stuff. Are we talking about the same thing here? Are you talking about going down that road again? Or is this something different? And if so, how's it different?
I hope it's different. I think we have to admit that this is a mess. That working with people is messy. That we're a mess and other people are messy. And I think what happened in the 80s, I think there were a lot of good things that happened. But there was also a lot of bad things that happened. This is the nature of things. And to be inhibited by past mistakes, okay, let's learn from them, but let's not be paralyzed by them.
Amen.
I think we're trying to discover what this means, what it could mean, how to do it appropriately. I do believe that it's very hard to start a disciple-making movement. To be the genesis, for me to be the genesis of that is very difficult. I need to connect to an accountability and to learn truly what is transparency. How do I know how to disciple another and share and encourage if I haven't had that experience with another person? And I think we all would benefit and be blessed by submitting to someone or someones in such a way to where you could read Scripture and pray and share those intimate thoughts and desires and spiritual ambitions, and to be encouraged and to realize truly what a healthy discipling relationship could be and should be. And maybe that's where the corporate church could be a great help, mm-hmm. to advocate for that, to set standards in a sense, or ideas, and to share a collective wisdom for that. You know, when we talk about a grassroots movement, I think Mark, you and I both agree, this ought to be within our community. You know, we believe in the churches. But we also understand that the church may have a limited capacity to help us get going and to be part of something. And if that's the case, then I don't think we should slow down, let's pursue it. But that churches could grow into a role of great resource, teaching, encouragement. But, you know, I've been interacting with individuals for a number of years now, and I cannot say that it all goes well. I think it's a mess. We deal with people. Sometimes it works very well, sometimes it doesn't. and we learn from that.
And without being hypercritical of what happened in the 1980s and the movements you were talking about, I think the key is being more like Jesus and being more grace-filled and more tolerant. People fail and make mistakes. I mean, Peter denied Jesus 3 times, and Jesus immediately, you know, after the resurrection, meets him on the seashore of Galilee and says, you know, do you really love me? If you do, feed my sheep, you know, care for my lambs. And so Jesus extended a second chance, in other words. And I think when we have accountability and we encourage obedience, there's always going to be failure. It's always going to be messy. There has to be grace-filled discipleship.
Okay, questions from the class. You want to engage these guys? Have they provoked thoughts for you or questions? I've got more questions if you don't. So. Yes.
I hear you all saying, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, that the disciple making is something that everybody does something individually. Can it be incorporated in part of a larger direction that the church is engaging in as a whole, instead of just letting people go rogue? Because I was a part of the Boston movement for a while, and that's what happened with us. And there was everybody was accountable to somebody else, but it got very, very messy. And I can appreciate what you say about people being messy, but I just think it can be incorporated into a larger, you may not like the program, but a larger direction where the leaders of the church are trying to lead the people in a certain way and asking the individual small group leaders or the individual mentors to lead people in a certain direction. Because what we found is people were going directions that they should have never been going, because there was people were just sort of operating on their own.
I think you're right, and I think establishing kind of a vision and a clarity of that direction of what this means, and helping people define terms. We've done this with a number of churches. I can think of one in Asia that we've kind of helped with, and they have a specific vision that includes the words "making disciples," and their membership understands. Okay, we understand kind of what that means. And we're going to move in that direction, and they're doing it through, again, I'm allergic to words like organization and institution, but things that the church programs that the church is sponsoring, like life groups or, care groups or whatever it is, and they're doing it through that into the individual members. And that's what you're talking about, I think. And it's not something that is highly controlled, and it does get messy, but it's something that has a specific direction. And it's not just, in your words, members going rogue and doing it however they want to. There is some direction towards this. And I think the Bible gives us that direction.
And I just think, and I'll finish with this, is that the Scriptures talk about community all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And disciple-making gone rogue creates less community, mm-hmm. I think.
Yes, sir.
So how about this? What I heard you say is people who are churchgoers or people who are going to church, we're discipling them, and really that's, I think, at the heart of what Jesus was saying. He said, go make disciples, baptize them, and then teach them to obey. So there is a sense of that. But what about the new person who comes into a church? How are we getting them involved in that process?
Good question.
You know, I think that's, you know, who's coming with him? You know, who does he already have a pre-existing relationship with? I think that's kind of where I land on a lot of this. I feel like too many times we take individuals when they're already kind of connected to a community, a normalcy, a leadership, a discernment group. And if that's possible, you know, work within that community. In that community. Obviously, we want that person, that individual who may be visiting, to be part of this church. But I think our ambition is that everyone in his family, in his community, the people that he's going to naturally live life with, and is living life with now, be redeemed. And so I think that's another element of this idea of discipleship. He can come individually and be a Christian. If we're going to use vulgar language, okay? But how can we get Christ in him and his relationships? And who are the appropriate people, maybe within the church, to help mentor that along? But, you know, people don't buy a car without talking to a loved one. You know, there's a major decisions. We don't make major decisions alone, not even in America. You consult people you trust. Who do you trust? Who do they trust before they make such a life-transforming decision? And work with that. I think, you know, that's why I think the question about how can our churches do something, I think sometimes our churches are not, you know, their objective is to grow, is to attract, is to, you know, to have more people. I think the ambition of we disciples is that Jesus get to the people, get to the lost, into all these relationships. And so just kind of looking at this at the end of how to push out rather than to draw in. And then who are the appropriate people to do that? And I think, you know, the community has a definite role, positive role for that. But we may not be now systematically set up for that. So I just give you another question with the question.
Another question?
Like, when you look at Jesus and how he discipled, you know, he didn't necessarily, like, say, hey, let's go have coffee and sit down once a week with his disciples. There was definitely some one-on-one teaching, but it was more of, hey, let's go out and do stuff together. And so I also wonder if that should be a bigger part of how we disciple is, okay, we got three people we're talking about, we're praying, but hey, let's go out and figure out how to love people. Almost like Mr. Rush was saying last night, that's what he's doing. He's actively looking for ways, hey, let me buy you a bagel and a coffee, and let's learn that way how to be disciples.
Never do anything by yourself that you can do with somebody else. And that was Jesus' motto, and that should be ours. You're right. Discipling is not just one-on-one across a table talking, although that's part of it. There's also the doing together and watching each other and helping each other and learning as you're doing. And that also instills within a DNA of sharing with others. If a person that's growing as a disciple sees others sharing, that's going to be part of his DNA. You know, the outreach, the evangelism, whatever you want to call it. That has to be part, because I don't think you can be a disciple unless you're making disciples. Okay? And that may sound harsh, but I think it's very biblical. Okay? You can't be a disciple unless you're making disciples. And so disciples have to learn to make disciples. And they learn by watching and doing with others. Okay? And that's a very important point that you're saying. The way Jesus did it was not just lecturing in the mornings and then dismissing everybody. It was, watch me and let's go together. And when he healed somebody, there were disciples there. And then he sent them out to heal. When he taught, the disciples were there. And they asked him questions later. What do you mean? And then they taught. So it was doing together.
Something that's on my heart right now, and it's, it may not address completely your question or your thought, but I have a son, a teenage son. And in the high school that they go to, there have been a number of suicides. And so we know these kids and families. And what's become bothersome to me and my wife is that there are people who are literally not seen. They're not seen. People don't regard them. They're suffering. They're here, but we don't see them. And specifically with my son, we live our life together. We do what we do. We don't make special trips and all this kind of stuff. But as we go, my intention is for him to see that person at the Target checkout line, to see this person that's over here maybe taking a cigarette break outside of Best Buy or whatever. But we talk about it. Sam, do you see that? What's on his face? When we talk to him, you just want to rub up and say hi. See, it is a going and with a specific purpose. I think this is the thing that I feel so strongly about, is that we're not just trying to be generally something. We're growing specifically in a quality or aspect of God. I want my son to see people, okay? We'll get to baptism later, but right now I just want him to see those who are invisible in our community. That's the kind of focus. And you know, I'm learning with him, obviously. And we mess up. And then we talk about it. And then we try again. That kind of stuff. But it's as we go as well.
Yes, sir, the mayor.
Kind of like a practical question on our church has been kind of throwing around the language of discipling and trying to have like more mature Christians discipling younger Christians and things like that. And I always have a hard time envisioning how that gets started. Like, am I supposed to like go ask somebody to disciple me, or am I supposed to like look for people that are less mature than me and say, hey, you should be my disciple? Or is this only like relating to non-Christians?
If you start with, hey, unmature person, please come to me, I find that works well.
I don't know how practically you get something like this started.
That's a great question, guys.
Well, at the local church where I was, they actually, you know, had a minister who was seeking people out for that. And so there was someone to kind of talk to. But who do you respect? You know, who are you willing to at least start with? Who would know? If you're absolutely right. And this is where I think the question of how can our churches be a positive, you know, kind of be helpful in this process, is at least have this desire and this appetite within the fellowship, you know, on the radar screen, and have maybe elders or other mature Christians, men and women, obviously, who would be available, you know, for a couple of 3 months to try this, to kind of get things rolling along. Because there are people in our churches, mature Christians, who can do this, and they're not being accessed. But maybe a little bit of training, you know, take some Bible class time and just prep people for this idea, this opportunity.
And how it works in your church is going to vary from how it works in other churches. Your church may need a more formal, intentional, okay, we're going to identify these people as mentors, and these people, you know, if you want to be mentored by them for the next 3 months, then sign up. You know, that might work, okay, in some churches. I think that it might typically work better in more of an informal way. It's just you pick the two or three you're going to spend more time with the next few months. And then when that's over, say, who's the one or two that you could do the same thing we've done, this journey we've been on, who can you take on that journey the next 2 or 3 months? And you start it that way. And that's more informal.
Could you give these guys a little bit more of a, how have you seen congregations do this practically, get it started? Give some specifics in regards to how, it's going to be different, but what would you do? You're talking about journey, spending time with, walking alongside, but how does that work? Give them some, a little bit of insight.
You talk about the nuts and bolts, or what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to kind of use that as my wrap-up. I'm anticipating a wrap-up.
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes, so you got 2 minutes to answer the strategy question.
To me, I think there's four, and Phil and I have talked about this hundreds of times the last few years. We've incorporated into the way we prepare missionaries to be disciples and make disciples. But just to sum up, I would use four words to kind of be the nuts and bolts of being a disciple and making a disciple, and that's incarnation, crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension. And those four words, and it's a whole 3-day, you know, discussion about these things from Scripture. What does it mean for me? What does incarnation mean for me? And things like that. But I think that's the heart of being a disciple. And if we can kind of help people walk through incarnation, help them walk through crucifixion, help them walk through resurrection, help them walk through ascension, and what does all that mean in my life? Not just what it meant in Scripture for Jesus, but what does that mean for me to be like that? To model that? I think that, to me, that's the nuts and bolts. That's the heart of discipleship. And there's many other things that orbit around those, but those are the hearts, that's the heart of what we're talking about.
I think probably one of the most practical helps is the Life Transformation Group. There's a website, it's a Neil Cole website, and we can get that to you if you want it. But it's how to start this discipleship group. It's a Life Transformation Group. Mm-hmm. It's typically from 3 to 4 people. You read a lot of Scripture. You pray. You meet every week. There's an accountability there. And they have kind of the predictable questions that you go from week to week. That's canned already, and that's an excellent resource. Like I mentioned, Bob Chisholm has a booklet. It's a readings for a year. 4 booklets. Spiritual Journey.
That's Canned Already, an excellent resource. It kind of gets folks started. You're reading the same thing. You're kind of cooking on the same stuff. And as the relationships grow and grow and grow, get more intimate, you can move into the questions and the accountability that we're kind of seeking here. There are a number of others, but I think those are probably the top two.
Let me add a couple other.
What did you have some books named?
Spiritual Journey. You'd have to get to me to get that one. I'm his agent.
Let me give you a couple resources you can easily download from Amazon today on your Kindle. One is a book by David and Paul Watson, Contagious Disciple Making, and it's really cheap on Kindle. What's it like?
It's $2.99 on Kindle. It's $9.99 paperback.
And it's an excellent kind of how-to walkthrough from somebody who's been involved in doing this globally for 20-some years with phenomenal results. And then another book that was coming from a different perspective, and I can't remember the author, but the book is called Disciple Shift.
Jim Putman.
If you are working as a leader in a congregational church who wants to go this way, he lays out a plan for how to take an existing church that has more of an instructional model to more of an obedience disciple model. And I would love to go visit his church and see if the reality looks like the book. But the book looks great. And so those are two resources for you. There's a lot of stuff out there. We have material we'd be happy to give away to you. If you want to contact us through our website or by emailing any one of us. Also, a little bit of a promo. We've got a lunch today in the Han Fireside Room. This isn't exactly the focus, but there's going to be a video that'll show or tell part of the story of how this is working in other parts of the world. Pretty phenomenal story of how this is working in Rwanda, where just since 2009, they've seen nearly 4,000 people baptized, over 220-something churches that have been started, all of it led by Rwanda nationals. It's gone viral with a decentralized disciple-making movement approach. You know, not every place the gospel goes, it gets the same results for a whole lot of reasons, but the same process can be put in play, and it's amazing what God can do when people really surrender to this approach. Thank you so much for coming. Sorry we didn't have more time, but we would be happy to stand around and visit with you for a while, and feel free to contact any one of us via our website, mrnet.org. Thank you so much. God bless.
What was that first book again?
Contagious Disciple Making by David and Paul Watson. It's 7